I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We're celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our brand new open line format that comes with the launching of a new website we have. You can also find an archive of past topics on our publication events tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is building and retaining an all-star team, five key factors. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We just have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to bring effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar. Our topics are in response to calls we get, emails we get from clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. We would love to get your feedback. We will be sending a survey out at the end of our program today and love to get some additional thoughts. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas in during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way on the chat box. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So make sure you write two or three questions down during the program if you would like to ask at that point or submit through the chat box. I want to introduce a longtime friend, business friend, personal friend. Larry is a true sage. Not teasing, Larry. It's true. And has immense business wisdom and life wisdom. Larry Cassidy is one of our senior business consultants and has been a chair for Vistage International for the past 25 years plus. He currently works with some 50 executives every month and has facilitated over 1,200 executive group meetings and participated in well over 11,000 face-to-face discussions with chief executives about all aspects of their businesses. He prepared his journey at Miami University, Ohio, and Northwestern for his MBA, and as a Marine Corps officer. He's worked with public companies such as General Mills, Quaker Oats, and PepsiCo. He's worked with privately held companies, family and foreign-owned businesses, in the 1980s as general manager and CEO of a few local companies. I feel privileged to have Larry with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be finding top talent in a tight market. Larry, welcome back to OpenLine, and thank you for kicking off 2016.
It's good to be with you.
So, program is yours.
Are you going to handle the slides?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so let me just make an opening statement for those that are with us. It's really two parts, the building the team and then retaining the team. The building the team is some ideas that I work with my clients regularly, but I've not shared on open line. And then the retaining the team is kind of a recap of some of the important things we have talked about before. So the first slide is here is just a series of points that leads into what I want to talk about. And I think stuff we would all agree with, hopefully we'd all agree with, which is finding all-star team players is very hard. And it starts out being very hard because life is a bell-shaped curve, and not everybody's an A player. And some people are A players in some things and not in others. So it's not just a matter of finding, it's a matter of the right fit. Those of you who are listening out there who do hiring, and I assume that's a lot of you, maybe all of you, you have your list of musts and wants. I'm going to share my list of musts. These are not going to be skill musts. I'm going to assume that each of you in your industry and in your specialty have ways of assessing skills. If you don't, you should. These are five very different characteristics. They're not about skills. They're about being what I call real players. And the reason I want to share these with you is that without exception, this is what I hear repeated as reasons why a hire was a great choice. In other words, wow, they have all these. Or as problems when a hire goes sideways. So slide two.
Well, before we go there, we actually had some questions that already came in. One was about millennials, and you're going to be answering that towards the end of the program, so we'll be addressing that. Question came in, what is the number one issue that CEOs are facing regarding their management team?
Well, I'm going to assume that I'm going to cover it in the next five slides.
Okay, and one more question before we jump ahead. What's the best way to keep all-stars without having to pay more money?
And I think that belongs in the retention part.
Okay, great. So we're going to cover all these.
Fair?
Perfect. Okay.
Okay, not putting anybody off, but one thing at a time.
Okay.
So here are the five factors, and I'll talk about them, and then we can take any questions you want on them. These are the five things that I think are absolutely essential to have a long-term player in your company and on your team. And I would go so far as to say these are criteria, in terms of just overall, who do you want to have in your life? And the first is, do they get it? Second, are they all in? Third, do they do the right thing? Fourth, can you count on them? And fifth, do you want to hang out with them? Do you want to be with them? So let's deal with each one slide by slide, Dana. Okay. Do they get it? Let me ask you a question, which obviously you can't all answer at the same time here. But if you were to pause it in this little discussion we're having, one-way discussion, and think for a moment about people on your team, in your life, at your church, on your soccer team, whatever, wherever you are, who get it. They're people who just get it. You know who they are. You think about them right now. You know who they are. Every job, every task, and every situation has a get it. Something that has to be done, that has to be mastered, that has to be attended to if that person is going to be a success and that job and that task is going to get done right. Top players have a nose for what matters. I once had a chat with the guy who headed up Chase Partners' PE operation. And he said when they collect a new company and they're looking for a CEO, the very first thing they try to size up is, does that CEO get it? Does he get what it takes to be a strong CEO? Does he get what it takes to be a strong marketing person or a production manager, et cetera? If they get it, they then tend to focus on what has to be done. So, again, think about those people in your firm or your department. You know who gets it and who doesn't, and you want people on your team who get it.
And that could be an admin person, data entry person, manufacturing person, at whatever level. It's all the same, isn't it?
Well, yeah. When I was in the Marine Corps, we used to compete every Friday on the platoons when I was a platoon commander. And the competition we had ended with a run from the parade ground to the top of a small mountain. Didn't seem so small when you were running up it. And all the way back. And the platoon that won was the platoon that got its last person across the line first. Not its first person, its last person, because everybody matters. And I think everybody listening has had that experience where something's gone sideways because somebody they weren't paying attention to mattered. Okay?
Ooh, that's great. Kind of like G.I. Jane.
Yeah. Not quite. It's a Marine Corps data.
Okay. Next slide?
Yep.
Okay.
The second thing that I want and I really lobby people to look for is, are they all in? You want people on your team who will bring their A game. Now, we all know your A game is a little different some days than other days. We don't always win, but we always have to compete every day. It's no hall passes. You can't accept anything that's half-hearted. The way I look at it, when I was working for people or when people were working for me, we had a deal. You know, I agreed to, as an employee to deliver something, and they agreed to pay me for it. I always got my check. So it was always my obligation to deliver what I had agreed to, what I had promised I would do in return for the pay, and vice versa. I think everything matters in a business. I think probably a lot of you are in businesses out there where it's nickels and dimes. I mean, it all adds up. So I want people who every day are coming and they're trying to do the very best that they can do. Okay, next slide. The third thing is do they do the right thing? This, for some people, is the trickiest thing to kind of measure. It's hard to measure ahead of time. You have to ask the right questions. You have to do, I think, the right job of reference checking. There may be some things through Lighthouse and Dana you can do on the testing side that will give you some ideas on this. It's really two things. It is the judgment thing. Do they have good judgment? And it's the values thing. And my point is a lot of work today is done with nobody watching. We have flatter organizations. People manage a much broader range of other managers, supervisors, and employees. We have far-flung branches, offices, people out selling. A lot of people are doing work on our behalf, and nobody's watching them. When you're not being watched, do you have good judgment, and do you have good values? You need to know that your key people have both. And what I would say is bad judgment costs money. I had that experience when I was running companies, including a few bad judgments I made. And bad values cost culture. And culture can cost a lot of money. It can cost really a lot of organizational health. So you really want people who do the right thing, and that's something you watch and assess over a period of time. Okay? Fourth, can you count on them? I just suggest to people to have a word picture. You've had a discussion. They've made a commitment. They get up. You nod at each other, and they walk out of the room, and you look at them as they walk out the door, and what do you think? Oh, I'm going to have to keep track of that? Or, good, he's got it, she's got it, don't have to worry about that anymore. You want people you can count on. I think solid organizations are built on commitment. I believe if somebody says that they'll do something, it's a sacred commitment, because people are counting on you. The organization is counting on you. And careers grow or wither, in my opinion, based in good part, not completely, but in good part upon dependability. I'm sure many, if not most of you out there, would value dependability as high as almost anything. Can you count on people? And I have a little sidebar on that I'd like to throw in, Dana. What I suggest to folks when they're assessing people is there's really three levels. First, you assess, let's say it's you and me, Dana, and I'm thinking about you. Do I trust you? That's a matter of values.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't trust you, then number two and number three don't matter. So do I trust you? Second, do you have the skill to do the job? That's the will I let you pack my parachute question. Do you have the skills required? I think most companies can or should be able to test for that. The third thing that I talk about with folks is it's not discussed a lot or as much as maybe it should be, and that is, so you trust them and they've got the skills, but are they ready for the next level of responsibility? It's one thing to be a really solid battalion commander, and it's another thing to be promoted and be the regimental commander. Whole different bag of worms. So when you're sizing people up in various capacities in your life, I kind of like the do I trust them, do they have the skill, and are they capable of handling the level of stuff that I need done? Okay?
Larry, a question just came in. Should companies be hiring for today or looking at the person for tomorrow? In other words, looking that they have the capacity to grow further? Or does it just depend on the position?
That's a really great question. I think the answer is it depends. I mean, if it depends on the position. If it's basic position, say a position in the plant, probably a lot of folks are being hired. You want very good people there. You want dependable. You want all these things you want. For the most part, they're not going to go on to be the president of the company. But if you're hiring somebody as part of your key management team, you should be thinking about where the company is going in the future. That includes, by the way, you thinking about where you are going, where you need to be, you know, what's the better version of yourself to which you need to be committed. And I, if I'm doing the hiring in that situation, I'm hiring you to get the job done now, but I also want to be able to see you operating at least at the next level up, maybe a couple levels up.
Okay, that's
great. It would be great if we could get that.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Okay. Next slide.
All righty. Do you want to be with them?
Yeah. This is number five, and to me, this is kind of basic. I don't think you have to be, beer drinking buddies with everybody you hire. That's for sure. But we spend a lot of time with fellow employees. Often, some people I work with spend more time with them than they do with their families. Being best buddies isn't a must, but getting along and feeling comfortable is important if you're going to build a team. So that would be the fifth of the five things that I really stress with folks when they're hiring, particularly hiring key people, important people in their organization. So Dana, let me recap. You know, do people get it? Are they all in? Do they do the right thing? Can you count on them? And do you want to hang out with them? You get all five of those things right, assuming you've done good skills testing. You're going to probably be in pretty good shape with that person.
So, Larry, a question just came in. If doing all five, what do you think the batting average should be for people that stick as new hires?
Well, let me ask you first. What do you do a lot of testing, a lot of work in hiring, Dana. You know, you've written books on it. What do you think the batting average is right now?
I know for our clients, because they're very thorough up front on interviewing, they actually do background reference checking, and they do the in-depth personality assessment with us, and they're very, very thorough. I don't know the number, but there's very few turns within a couple of years. I'd say that very high opportunity for it working out. And nothing's perfect, but we've had companies that have come to us and said, look, if you can improve our hiring process, reduce our turnover by 3 to 5%, we'd be immensely grateful. And that's all they wanted. But they knew how much it cost to have turn.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I've heard any number of estimates of what a failed hire costs, from one time salary to five times salary. And the cost, by the way, is not the search fee. That is part of the cost. The cost is missed opportunity. I mean, that tends to be the sizable cost. I would say that the people I work with, when they first started doing a better job of hiring, they would say that they're batting anywhere from 50-50 to 60-40. That, of course, would depend on how they define success. I would say success to me is if you hire me and I end up in the 90% or higher of what you wanted, you should probably want it too much, but if I end up at that, I'm probably a successful hire. 80%, depends on the position. So those would be kind of my definitions. I think that if you use tools like you offer, you're a company that offers those kinds of tools. But if you pay attention to these five things, I'd be very surprised if you didn't get yourself an extra 10 or 15 or 20% in terms of success rate. That's not good. Nothing's going to take you to perfect, what if you got a 10% success rate over time, and you multiplied that times the cost of failed hires that you didn't have? What would that be worth to you? I mean, you all have calculators. You can all do that yourself in terms of what you believe. But I've never met anybody that didn't think that a failed hire didn't cost them money. I mean, everybody believes that.
Yeah, it adds up. One more question before we go to the next slide. Larry, do you think that having a best friend at work is important?
My immediate reaction is no. Actually, I was smiling when you asked me. My thought was having a best friend at work, depending on your position and their position, can be dangerous. But the real truth is we spend more time at work than we do at probably any other one place. And we make some great friendships at work. I'm not quite sure what's in the mind of the person that asked it, whether they're wrestling with a problem or they're thinking about hiring a best friend.
I think they had read something regarding Gallup that they showed an increase with having a friend there. I've seen a mix
well,
on that.
Well, that, okay, thinking about it that way, I'm, and I don't know if I'm correct in saying this. You've had some other people on that have a lot of expertise in the new younger folks that are coming out of the workforce, but the ones that I talk to, and I have a number of clients that obviously are hiring younger people, I get a chance to meet and talk with them, and that can be important to them to have, I don't know, best friends, but to have really good relationships, people they want to be with. So whatever tag you put on that, the reason I hesitated when I started to say that is I'm not sure that that's unimportant to any
okay.
of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And having a supportive relationship within, that's a cultural thing.
Well, I think what I was hung up on in the beginning is, let's say that's a very nice thing to have, but it can't get in the way of making the decisions that need to be made and doing the business that needs to be done.
Good point. Okay, we're on to the next slide. All employees must know.
Yeah, We've kind of done one version of this, Dana, before, and I kind of cherry-picked what I thought some of the more important things were, and I think some of these become even more important with the younger workforce. You and I have talked about that. I think people need to know where the firm is going. I mean, just ask yourself, how well do you do doing something if you don't have somewhat of a picture in your mind? If I set up a bunch of pins at the end of the alley and give you a bowling ball and then I hang a curtain between the pins and you, how well do you do? So I think I'm not talking about providing excruciating detail or private information that you don't want to hand out, but I think everybody in the firm needs to know where they're going, why the goals matter. One of the biggest reasons the goals matter is that if you set a goal for improved cash flow or profitability or market share or whatever, if you accomplish that goal in the time period, that creates a resource you have available, a new resource you have available for the future period. You know, so if I want to increase my cash flow by $300,000 at the end of the year, my free cash flow, I've got another $300,000 that I can apply to things in the next fiscal year. They need to know how we're going to accomplish the goals. That's the action plans, and that's where expectations are set and where accountability resides. And I think just crucial, people need to know how they contribute. I mean, I was talking to a CEO who happens to be he's in Siberia, and he and I were talking this morning, and he made the point from that far away that everybody in my organization wants to feel important. They want to feel like they matter, and I think it's our job to be really sure that they understand how they contribute and why it matters. And then, obviously, the payoff, the rewards, what they're paid, what the other benefits are. And the more clarity you have on this kind of stuff, I think the better. And I say that watching a variety of firms that do it in a variety of ways. So Let's go to the next slide.
Actually, two questions came in. First
okay.
question is, what's the best way to give employees a picture?
I think that can depend a little on your personality and do you like to stand up in front of folks and talk? But I think the more personal way that it's done, it seems to me to be the more effective. Now, that may depend on your company size. It's kind of hard to stand in front of everybody every quarter, for example, if you've got 22 offices all around the country. There are people that do that by video, but some of the smaller and medium-sized companies I work with, CEO has essentially a town hall meeting. And tells people where they are and where they're going in the next quarter and what they want to accomplish and what that'll mean to them as a company. And then as we're doing here today, they take questions. That would be the way, if I was going to go back, God forbid, if I was going to go back and run a company, that would be the way I would do it, is as much face-to-face interpersonal exchange as I could. So I think that's the basis of building trust, not emails, not newsletters, but talking to people and answering their questions honestly.
Okay, that's good. One last question before we go on. One of the issues I see is that it's great to share a vision, but if you're not sharing the rewards with the rank and file, why do they care? And part two, for that matter, why would the people charged with executing the vision care if they aren't included in the rewards, getting paid?
Well, I think both, I mean, my immediate reaction is both of those questions add up to a third question, which is, why aren't they participating in the rewards? I mean, if I hire you and you play any role in my getting somewhere, I want to have some kind of a reward system for you. And I have plenty of clients that they have reward structures that reach right down to the factory floor. I was just left a meeting with a professional services firm near the end of the year where the previous day they had handed out cash bonuses to everybody. They do it. It's very interesting. Everybody gets the same amount on that day. They have their own separate bonus program by level, you know, and by job grade, but they had an extra bonus distribution and they divided it by the number of employees and everybody got the same handful of cash. Those people understood that they mattered. So my question would be, why wouldn't people participate in the reward program?
We're going to be doing a program on scorecarding later in the year with Mark Emmer on this very topic.
Yeah,
and I
good.
Would say...
Mark's real good.
Excellent. And if companies aren't doing it, it just shows where their mindset is at. They're not going to get the best people. There's not going to be the growth because the gratitude isn't there. But that's
well, just
topic.
Answer the question, how do you feel when you sign up to be involved in something and then they leave you out? How
Ooh.
Does that feel?
Yeah. Good point. That's when you lose your players. And Larry, you're going to address that now.
Am I? Okay, let's do it. Okay, got it. So there's four things here. Obviously, you pay attention to your current assets. I think that I want the people in my organization to be getting better. I'm accused of, when I work with the 30 or so people running companies, sometimes being a little corny about this, but I don't care. We work together to run better businesses and use better business practices, but I tell them that the real reason that we meet and that we meet regularly over a long period of time is so that they are propelled on a journey towards being the best version of themselves. Because if they can accomplish that, if they buy into that and they want to work on that, it's not my call as to what that is, that's their call. It shows up in everything they do, including how they lead their company. And so to me, it follows if I want to be a better version of myself, then ensuring that everybody in my organization becomes a better version of themselves is a huge payoff for them, and there's a huge payoff for the organization. And we've already talked about the idea that everyone wants to matter. Everybody wants to feel important. If you want people to feel like they matter, then raise your expectations for them. And if you want them to feel important, treat them like they're important. None of this is rocket science.
Right.
I think I've kind of talked or edged around the idea of committing to develop and grow future leaders. There was a question a little while ago that we talked about where you want people who not only can get today's job done, but you see them in the picture, you know, let's say over the next 3, 5, 8, 10 years. I think in small and medium firms, you have to be somewhat more creative. You know, the old vision that we had, or I shouldn't put that on all of you, the vision I had years ago when I started, you went to college, graduated from college, got married, got a station wagon, house in the suburbs, 2 kids and a dog, and you climbed the corporate ladder. Well, some of that still works, but a lot of places there's no corporate ladder anymore. And in a sense, the ladder has been turned on its side because organizations have been flattened. So, and particularly in small organizations, you bring in somebody who's you realize is a star performer. What do you do with them? You have other people, good people, at the next level, and there's not levels in between. And I think probably what you should consider doing is particularly for some of the newer people coming in who like different experiences. They want to be exposed to different things. They want a chance to grow and to learn and to participate, be part of stuff, is you move them laterally. I have clients that are doing that. They'll hire somebody, they'll be in finance for a while, and then I actually had one that put that person out in the sales force, working under a very good person. Give some thought to moving people laterally into different functions. Now, you don't want to put somebody where they're absolutely ill-suited, but good people usually can do 2 or 3 things. And if you're a small company, has the added benefit that you're actually doing some cross-training and you have some backup. Project assignments are a good way to do it. I like the idea of mixing up teams. By that I mean mixing up teams of members from different functions. Gives them exposure. I wouldn't have anybody do a project that wasn't meaningful. But in the process of their doing a project, you get to assess their leadership, you know, how they think, how they communicate. And I almost guarantee you if you do that, you'll begin to see in some of the people characteristics that you want for the future. And then there's mentoring, which is, I'm not going to get into a little different than coaching, but I think obviously we should be in a coaching role, and it also makes sense to me if there's 1 or 2 people that you think are potential real leaders for the future. Those are people that if you're the leader, you should be mentoring them or having somebody very strong mentor them. Okay.
Larry, a question just came in, and you've addressed some of this, but maybe encapsulate it. What advice do you have in creating succession planning?
That sounds to me like maybe a day-long seminar. It depends what kind of a company. I assume the question is being asked from a company that's a private company.
Let's say privately held mid-cap.
Yeah. So there are tangential questions like, is a family company? Are there kids that are working in the business or you want to have work in the business? You want to keep it in the family? What do I think about succession planning? The first thing I think is that far too many companies don't do it and don't do it on a timely basis, and that causes a lot of disruption when the patriarch or matriarch gets to a point where they don't want to do it or can't do it anymore. It creates a lack of clarity. I have some firms, I wouldn't say it's the majority, that I work with that give a great deal of thought to this and try to identify people. And then if you go back, I'm not asking you to go back, but, actually we're still on the same slide. If you do some of these things, you begin to see who the potential people are that can take on a lot more, not just do the job they're doing really well, but take on more. That's to me is a really important element in succession planning in a smaller company. I think it's something in some ways we're not the best suited to do by ourselves, and I don't have a list of people to recommend it. You probably have worked with some, Dana, but if I was really serious about it and I had a firm of some real substance and had some real issues to deal with, if it was a family company, I might be talking to, you know, some of the universities here that have family business operations in them, or I might be talking to Dana and asking him for recommendations as to who might come in and help you think through this. Kind of like you'd go to an estate lawyer to redo your wills or trusts, which, by the way, is part of it in a lot of companies.
We have a couple of questions came in. I'm only going to take one, and then we'll open the line later on for those of you who'd like to ask Larry directly, or you can always contact Larry later on. But the question I'm pulling out of the hat here is, how does the assumption is that do all five things that it raises the bar for people staying. How does this resonate with millennials? And do you have any personal examples from yourself or with your clients?
Yeah, I probably have less examples because millennials are newer to the workforce, and you know you haven't tracked them, you know, up through their 30s into their, you know, in 40s. But I don't, if I'm hearing your question correctly, Dana, I don't know that it's that much different. I mean, the kind of things I've talked about today, you may have to dish them up in slightly different ways, but I think these things matter to everybody. I mean, we're all just human beings. Now, I don't know if I missed the nut of your question. I'm going to stop and let you recalibrate me if you need to.
No, you hit it. We did an open line the other month, and all of you are open can go onto our site under the publication events tab, find
right.
that discussion. And we had a panel of millennials. And what was interesting to me in listening to everyone was, Larry, you actually covered it all. Respect, communication, engagement, allowing input. It frankly didn't sound different than for any other generation. It was all the same stuff, maybe repackaged. But that was about it.
Yeah, that orients me a little better because I did not hear that open line. But I think there are some extras with millennials, and I get this from them, but I also get it from the folks I work with, is that there's more of a sense of wanting to be in on things and wanting to know why. And in my generation, you know, decades ago, you know, I was raised, you speak when you're spoken to. I mean, it's just a whole different ball game. I'm the millennial. I mean, I have a millennial. So I get it. They want involvement. And they just automatically think that they deserve involvement, and why wouldn't they? Because that's how we've raised them, you know, to be involved in everything and to have a lot of stuff. So that's probably kind of the extra thing that I think you have to deal with if I'm hearing my clients correctly. But I'd like to skip over that and make a point that's a little different but related, and that is, I believe that the successful companies, you know, going forward, are not going to be the ones who are determined to pound millennials into the mold that they think they should be in, but rather find a way to blend three or four different generations together into a really powerful, cohesive organization. Because they all bring something that's vital. They all bring different ways of thinking about things. If you can get the Xers and the Boomers and the ones that are left and the Millennials and et cetera all working well together, you can have an extraordinarily powerful team. Much like being a CEO or a business owner who realizes I'm good at this and this, but I'm not good at these things, and goes out and hires people that are way better at the things that he or she is not good at. And now you have a powerful team. And I think the very same principle applies across generations.
And it's interesting you brought that up. I do it.
By the way, Dana, give, hang on a minute. To give up the idea you're going to pound them into, there's more of them than there are you. You can't win. And they are the people you're going to be hiring. That's the workforce coming along. So it's something that has to be figured out, and griping about it is not going to be effective. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. One is there are always live wires within every generation. You want the live wires. Nothing's going to change. Live wires are live wires. Deadheads are deadheads. Two other things. I give a talk to associations on different generations. And one of the things I do is I pick different generational folks to come up on stage and have them read off a little paragraph about themselves. Then I ask the audience, so what do you hear that's a commonality? And then the audience will say a few things, and I'll turn to the panelists, and I'll turn to the youngest person and say, so what are you hearing? Well, I just want to be included. I'll go to the person that's the eldest one. What are your thoughts on this? I just don't want to be left out, the middle. Yeah, me too. What does that come back to? The five items that you identified, Larry. No different.
I think it also comes back to, when you get past air and food and water and, kind of the basic needs, in the next group of needs, one of the highest is belonging. People want to belong to things, to something. It's part of their identity. It's what happened, thousands of years ago with tribes. It's why we have something called Steeler Nation with, millions of people who belong to Steeler Nation all over the world, because belonging is important. And I think the millennials really evidence that kind of more boldly and on a more personal basis. They want it, and they and some of them actually demand it. But I don't mean to try to take this into a discussion on millennials, because you've already had that, and I'm sure you'll have a few more of those on Open Line.
It's really worthwhile. If those of you who didn't get to attend, go on and listen to it, because I think it'll be really an eye-opener. Because some people say, this generation, they're lazy. The people that I had in the panel, these were not lazy individuals, not one of them. They're go-getters. So if you want a go-getter is a go-getter no matter what the generational thing is. It is what it is.
Yeah,
and
when I was preparing to leave high school for college in the mid-50s, which I know to a lot of listeners out there sounds a long time ago, I can imagine that my mom and dad were looking at each other saying, oh, my God, what's this world going to come to? I mean, I'm not sure the conversations are all that much different.
No. I would say in listening, they really aren't. So, Larry, any closing thoughts before we open up the line?
No, I'd just rather, if anybody has any questions, give them the time to ask any questions.
Okay. I'm going to go to the last slide here. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with Larry. You'll see on your screen an area for registering for our February 18th program, Finding Top Talent in a Tight Market. It's going to be a very popular topic, so you'll want to jump on that one as soon as you can. Also, in the next few days, you're going to receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Larry and I want to thank you guys for attending. We love all of you for attending it and spreading the word. Our numbers keep going up higher and higher every month. And we've been doing this for a number of years, and it's because we're actually able to share some quality ideas with everybody. So let me turn off the recording feature, and then we're going to open the line, and you can talk directly with Larry. What I will ask is everybody put your phone on mute, because we have quite a number of people on the call today, and then unmute your phone when you want to ask a question. So just hold it for just 10 seconds.